Welcome to Christ Today. Heavenly Father, be with us as we examine our lives and our future, and as we look towards living a holy and righteous life, and as we look towards any physical preparations and sharing things with others. Be with us as we seek understanding in Jesus' name, amen. We are still in the National Preparedness Month, which is the month of September of each year. I'm going to talk about preparedness thoughts, which is broadcast in segments, 5-minute segments on KKXX. And now, who remembers the story of the little red hen? I do. It talks about the many steps that it takes to make bread, which we eat. And this concept is reflected in 2 Thessalonians 3:10. It talks about, if any would not work, then neither should they eat. And that is reflected in the little red hen story, where there was no help to gather the wheat, to grind the wheat, to bake the bread. And after all that work, the animals wanted to help to eat the bread. But the little red hen had only enough to feed her little family of baby chicks. The Bible verse is about working and eating, and it's good for us to remember, and it also is good to remember that we ought to have charity also. And if you're not sure which theme is to be examined or embraced when, then read the Bible and stay in prayer and ask God these questions. He answers prayer. He answers questions. The subject of preparedness goes hand in hand with the examination of what will happen in the future. And we do not know what will happen in the future, so we get prepared for what we think might occur. And everyone, that they have their own thoughts about what the future holds and how we can prepare for whatever it is. As a history guy, I think about the repeated pattern of millions of people dying from starvation. Sometimes the lack of food is from a natural cause, and too many times it is caused by a power-hungry political man. But for whatever the reason, in the last 100 years, there have been hundreds of millions of people intentionally starved to death. And this mass starvation was often due to a government which had a communist form of government and a ruthless dictator at its head. Occasionally, starvation was due to a natural type of disaster, like a heavy rain or very cold weather or a volcano, which had the ash that stayed in the atmosphere and did not allow enough sunlight to reach the earth and grow the grain harvest to its maturity. So famines are a historical occurrence. Sometimes they're natural cause and sometimes they're man-caused. But what would you do if the grocery stores had almost empty shelves? We just cannot even imagine this. But in many countries, this is the way it has happened. Nearly empty grocery store shelves. Worldwide, it's not that unusual of an event to have stores that are short of food or other things. So, what if? Now, these days, I have talked about these preparedness things to people. What would they do in a situation where they had no food? And typically, the people I talk to say, they would go out into the woods and live off the land. And I think, yeah, well, sure, eating berries sounds real good. But the berry season does not seem to last that long. And after the berries are picked, they won't stay edible very long. So, yeah, berries are good, but they're just not enough food to live off of. You probably wouldn't have enough calories from them either. So what else? What would you do if you were eating food in the woods? Well, there is miner's lettuce, and that is a good form of greens. But there again, there's not so many plants of it in the wild. I think the best answer that I can see is to get the food in the wild. If that's what we have to do, if we have to get food in the wild, we would get acorns. But acorns, well, that's a whole problem all by itself. It's not just like you can get them and eat them. No, it's not an easy process to make them edible. First, you have to find the right oak tree with acorns that don't have wormholes in them, and they're ones that are pretty much fallen. And then you collect a whole lot of them. You shell them, and then you soak them in water. A stream is often used, a basket in the stream, for 4 to 7 days. Or you soak them in a water-filled container, and the water must be changed once or twice a day. And this will get you a lot of acorns to eat, but they are still a little bit bitter. But the process of soaking them in water takes the bitterness out. So after the acorns are ground into a paste, the paste must be dried either in the sun or by using a stove. And either way, that acorn flour paste must not get over 150 degrees. If it does, the starches break down, and it is not as good as it would otherwise be if and when you eat it. So, next, after it's all dried, you can turn it into bread. Well, it's sort of a bread. It's not what we think of as bread. Or you can make a porridge out of it. I understand this dried acorn paste, or call it flour, will stay good to eat for between 4 and 7 months, but not longer. And I've heard people say that to keep it, well, to make it edible, you need to have a little bit of the wheat flour that we normally eat with it, like 1/3 normal wheat flour and then 2/3 the acorn flour. And then it's something that we can tolerate, we who have had a modern diet. So, yes, to live off the land sounds good, but it's really not that easy. And if you think you can survive on leaves and roots and acorn flour, well, maybe you can. But to me, there is a lesson here that grain is so much easier to get now. So instead of getting by on acorn flour and miner's lettuce and berries, I think we should take a look at having grains on hand. You can buy them in bulk, buy wheat, buy any of the other grains that you like to eat. Get sugar, salt, and oil at the same time. Vitamins and flavorings are good also. And of course, you will want to get a manual wheat grinder to grind your wheat or grains into flour. Then you'll cook it in a cast iron pot with a lid, and often enough, spices are good to have with it also. So I went on with this long description about acorns and how to make acorn flour to illustrate how very much easier it is to buy plenty of wheat now while it is available instead of making acorn flour. Yeah. We're not used to eating acorn flour and acorn porridge, so we'd have to get used to a brand new flavor. So get what you need now is a good theme while it is available. It's kind of similar to our water supply. Water is easy to get now, and all we have to do is turn the faucet on, and we get good drinkable water. So in a natural disaster, or any other disaster, that could completely change our water supply. So the water that would come out of our tap might not be drinkable anymore. Things happen. Just look at that hurricane in the east, or look at natural disasters. Things happen. So there are lots of people that do think about disaster planning. Our government is full of people who plan for disasters. I think one of the things they say is that everyone should have 1 gallon of water per day per person. So, doesn't that make you wonder about how much water and food a person should have on hand? I don't think there's a real answer here. But I know that the government does recommend having 3 to 4 days of food and water on hand for everybody. But after the Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans, many of the first responders were suggesting a 2 to 3 week supply of food and water, and that should be the minimum. So what are people thinking about these days? As I casually talk to people about emergency preparedness, the biggest group of people have no extra money and no extra space to put any supplies. And to them I recommend get a little bit of white rice, sugar, cooking oil, salt, and a few gallon jugs of water. That's not too expensive, and to have something is better than to have nothing. The last category of people are those who see something very serious coming to this country, and they don't know what, and they don't know when, but they are very concerned. And they are thinking in terms of having 1 year of supplies on hand. Of course, when they tell me this, I don't know who they are, and I don't want to know who they are. But it's interesting to know that there are people who are thinking along these lines. There is a trend that more and more people are getting concerned with what would happen in the future if something pretty serious were to happen. And they don't know what, but they see the possibility for all sorts of things. It's a growing trend, and people are seeing it more and more. In general, water and warmth are probably the biggest concerns, and of course food is so important also. I know that if you talk to, certain prepper people, they're kind of like survivalist preppers. They talk about you can live, there's that rule of threes, and so you can live 3 days without water. Well, I don't think that should be a part of your plan. I've surely gone a day without water, and it's no fun. It alters your body chemistry. So don't think in terms of those rules of three. Yeah, you will live, but it takes a while to get back to normal if that's what you are considering. So, 1 day without water and your mind is not as clear and your body does not function as well. That's my experience. So, have your just-in-case plan and have water in that plan for just-in-case the water does not come out of your faucet. See, all over the country we have water main pipes breaking each and every day. And we just don't know when it'll happen in your neighborhood or mine. There are also man-made disasters and natural disasters which come along, and it can all affect us in a big way. So I think water and food and warmth, they're each very important. And in times of an emergency, we think of what we would prefer. Would we prefer to be in need and have to go to somebody to get what we need? Or would we prefer to be someone who had things and was able to give aid and comfort to other people? I think we like to give things. So let's think of having a few things on hand so that we can give aid and comfort to other people. So keep that in mind when you're putting your preparedness stuff together. Have some extra. And sure, I would think that feeding yourself would be one of the most basic elements of life. Yeah, what do you think? So how would you do that if there was a major earthquake that made big cracks in our state? Or if there was a major fire that burnt things up? Or if a dam broke? It almost happened in Oroville. And could it happen in Shasta Lake? It's pretty unlikely, but I think it is possible, especially if there was an earthquake that we had break a dam. So, things happen, and we also have the Cascadia earthquake fault that runs along the coast of California and Oregon and Washington State. That is a big concern. Yes, that is. And so is the New Madrid fault, earthquake fault. It is over by St. Louis, Missouri. And either of these could cause really big destruction and a really great loss of life. So, you remember Mount St. Helens in 1980? I went to see both that the earthquake, Mount St. Helens and the area before and after its eruption. And it was very interesting. Before the eruption, well, it was very interesting to see the fire come out of the volcano. And it did sometimes, but not always. And after the eruption, you could just see the ash all over everything, and it blocked every single road. It closed all the roads, for a time being, anyway. So it was very interesting to see what effect a volcano would have. Yeah, the smoke and the fire and all of it coming out was interesting. Well, that's the things I find interesting. So that was in 1980, but there was a smaller eruption also in 2008 at Mount St. Helens. So volcanoes, they're still around in our life, in our area today, in a big way. And we just don't know when anything will happen that will disrupt our life. So, we like to get a little prepared. I know I think of Yellowstone, too. Because that Yellowstone super caldera volcano, if that were to go off, it would not be 10 times greater than Mount St. Helens. It would not be 100 times greater than Mount St. Helens. It would be 1,000 times greater than the Mount St. Helens eruption. And all the central states could be blanketed in several feet of ash. And this would mean the land in those surrounding states would be unable to be farmed. And there's so much farmland in that area. The Smithsonian Channel estimated that it would be unable to be farmed for at least 6 years. So how would we get enough to eat if that happened? Well, the scientists will tell you that they don't know, and they don't know when an eruption like that would happen, but it will. So could it be 10 weeks away, 10 years away, 10 decades away? We just don't know. But we know surprises happen. So I'd like to suggest that you use your mind and reason out what makes sense to you. And of course, pray about it, because we often get spiritual guidance that goes beyond what our reasoning is. Yeah, read the Bible and ask which passages apply to you. I know there's Matthew 6:25, and it says to take no thought about your life and what you will eat or drink. And I know there's another passage, Proverbs 22:3, which is about wise people who see trouble coming and get out of the way, but the simple keep going and are punished for it. So the Bible has different words for different times and different situations. And you get to evaluate that. You get to figure out what applies to you. And I hope you do that prayerfully. Some people are so sure that one passage or another applies to them that they seem to disregard the other passages that just might make you think a little more. So to me, I think we need to read all these things for ourselves and make our own decisions. And then we get the consequences of our decisions. And that's just how it works. I know there's lots of words and phrases in the Bible, and we can see what applies to us and what doesn't at this moment in time. That's a part of why we need to have conversation and prayer with our God through Jesus Christ and with the Holy Spirit. As time goes by, it seems we gain the ability to both speak and listen to God as we learn about the character and the fact of our living God. And we each have a different path to understanding the God of the Bible. Some people will have a big and powerful immediate experience. My path was slower. I read lots of books, and I read the Bible twice and up to that time, and it was a long, slow journey for me. I have known people who have had an immediate experience and belief, but for me, it was a lot longer. So God gives us what we need to experience that will show us the truth of the matter and what is right for us. So I know that if God can show me His truth, God can certainly show anyone the truth of who God is. Long before I was married, I would go to visit my future wife, and I would end up talking with my future mother-in-law a lot. And she was, and she is, a Christian, and for years she called me by her nickname for me, which was the heathen. Funny how things have changed. She doesn't call me that anymore. But I have to say that if God could show me, teach me about the truth of His existence, I know that God can show anyone the truth of His existence. So I would say, seek the truth. In my life, I've never been in the military, but I have wanted to see the world, and I did go to several continents. There have been two obvious lessons for me to learn. One was how good it is here in the United States of America, and the second lesson is how things are not what they appear. And that includes the newspaper articles that we read about, or about some big event happening, why it's written about in a far different terms in different newspapers. And that would depend on the country which you were in. So whether it was in the United States or some other country, yeah, I saw that the events of the news were far different from what I understood them to be. And this is a lesson that I had already learned because of my earlier life. I met with business people and I met with political people. And the newspaper reports of public meetings were never accurate. It seemed to me that whoever wrote the article about the meeting just couldn't have been at it. They just missed the major points, and they wrote about things that were smaller issues. So I learned that while you can learn things from newspaper articles, you should not believe them, not really. And that was a big lesson. You could not believe the newspaper articles. So I learned to grasp what the general idea was and then to make sense of the other information that I could grasp according to what made sense, according to a practical examination and my understanding of what basic human experience was about. And this was a hard lesson for me because for me, I had in my family, I'd learned how essential it was to have a good and decent integrity. And that was just something that was kind of missing from the world. And it took me years, but I did kind of learn to protect myself and not believe everything I was told. There were some hard and painful lessons. So today I've learned that there are characteristics that we can pay attention to and be skeptical about some, be trusting about others, but have some limits. That's what I learned. So having been to as many foreign countries as I have been to, and having heard the stories of the travels of other people to other countries, I've had a great appreciation for the United States of America. For example, I've been to stores that sell coats in other country, and in other countries they would be small stores, more like a living room with a bunch of coats in it. And so your choices were limited, and they were all probably pretty nice coats and really expensive too. So if you wanted a different style of coat, you had to go to a different store, probably a good distance away. That's what it was like in a foreign country. That was just common. And another one example is I used to use Neutrogena soap. And here in the United States at that time, it was costing about $1 per bar. And in Germany, I went into a little European drugstore, and the bar of Neutrogena soap cost the equivalent of $4.30. So, you see, sometimes prices in small stores can be higher than you expect. So that's another point of appreciation about the things in the United States of America. We have a lot, and it is reasonably priced compared to other countries. And what about buying food in other countries? See, in our country, it's easy to buy a good supply of food for that just-in-case situation, but not so in other countries. In any other country, anything you do that is out of the ordinary is notable. So it's not just that groceries cost more, it's that if you do something like buy a lot of one thing, well, you're going to be remembered. And don't be surprised if you are brought to the attention of the local constable, or call it the police, or it's not that anything would happen, but you would be noted and remembered. And anything out of the ordinary, that's what happens. That's just the way that it is. If you were somebody who was a rancher in Europe and you typically bought the groceries, well, you would buy them all and that would be typical for you. But you'd probably have to place your large order like a month in advance. So that's the way it is in some other countries. So I just love the freedom. and the ample supplies that we have in the United States of America. I remember once in South America, I bought two ice cream bars. And it was not a rich area of South America. And the shopkeeper was surprised that I bought two ice cream bars. And there was only one of me. One person and two ice cream bars? Well, he could hardly believe it. So, I tell you, the riches that we have in America are great. And I suppose the best we can do is to appreciate all the richness of life that we have. So, I have gone to a lot of places. I've flown a lot. And I don't know how people can fly a lot today, because in the old days, when I was young, you could buy standby tickets. And they didn't cost so much, because if they had an empty seat, they would let you fill it with a standby ticket. And you were never sure that you could get on a flight, but if there was just one person, you probably could. And the cost of the ticket was so much less. Like I said, today, there are no more standby tickets. I don't think they've had them for 20 years. But they did have them once, and so I got to travel a lot. I know that there's a whole lot of things in life that we have to examine. Sure, the things change in how we travel and where we go and what we understand, but one thing that does not seem to change is the hearts of men, women, and children. It seems those things never change. And I think that we should just consider what that means for our preparedness consideration. Now, I think about preparedness, and I think the first step is think. You know, I say think, plan, and do. That's what I like to say. And so the first step is to think. Think about what your goals are and what steps you need to take, and then make the plan to do it, and then you take the active steps. Pretty simple. And you can always put into that equation how much money you have available to put into that category. It can all be worked out. It's just that you have to think about it, you have to make a plan, and you have to do it. And don't be too concerned if you can only afford some smaller items, because that's where we all start. We all start someplace, and pretty much it's always small. And over time, we build up our supplies, and some people will start with 5 or 25 pounds of white rice, and 1 gallon of cooking oil, and 5 pounds of sugar, and 1 pound of salt. And if that's what you can spend, well, that's what you can spend. If you can spend more, get a few gallons of water. That is where you start. And like I said, everyone has to start someplace. Maybe you can spend $25 initially, and maybe it's $50. Well, give it some thought and do what you can. You can always make a plan and do more later. And I know that how much a little white rice and salt and oil. Well, it's good. It might not be your first choice, but it's so good when you're hungry. And I know hunger can change your attitude towards food a lot. You'll be willing to eat food that you never would have considered before when you're really hungry. And so you keep that in mind for when you get those simple foods. And I know we all have to make choices in life. And what food we get is a big choice. But somehow there's a difference between what we would want to eat when we have full stomachs and what we are willing to eat when we're hungry. And when we can only afford to get so much of the certain foods, because that's all we can afford. So, like I said, get something. Get some food supplies. Get some water. Get warmth. Yep, the whole thing is you think and you plan and you do. And remember, those most basic elements, air, water, food, and warmth. So warmth could be clothing or it could be shelter. So if you ever go through an emergency, you will find that the pain that a difficult situation brings is so notable that you want to make sure you never have to experience that disaster situation unprepared ever again. So you make sure you're prepared, and that's for just in case another disaster comes along. So yeah, you live and you learn and you get prepared. Do what you can. I know that in a disaster, you do also want to remember to stay positive, because you will get through the situation. You will survive. That's just the way people are. People are strong. And probably you'll have some pretty good stories to tell about your experiences after the situation is over. Well, as a part of the planning, you have to think about what you would do if there was no electricity. So that's a question. Electricity is a complete unknown. Sometimes the lines get burned up. Sometimes, well, all sorts of things happen. And we just don't know if we will have electricity or if we will be without electricity for a short time or a long time after a disaster situation. But whatever the situation is, you do have to think about taking care of yourself and those people around you. So can you take care of yourself? If you can't take care of yourself, then surely the government can take care of you. Ha! Oh no, they can't take care of you. The government has supplies for its top political people and its military forces. But our government has no supplies of food for we the people. The Red Cross doesn't have food supplies either. If they need to go into an area and bring food, they buy it, and then they bring it into the area in need. That's what they do. So you never know what you're going to be faced with, or what you will have, or what you won't have. But to me, I think of the long-term food supplies, foods which will last for the long term, that I don't have to worry about. If they are lasting or not lasting, I think of wheat or spelt and maybe other whole grains. I think of sugar. I think of salt and oil. So if I was going to get 100 pounds of wheat or some other grain, I would get 25 pounds of sugar, 5 or 10 pounds of salt, and probably 2 gallons of oil. Plus a cast iron pot and a propane stove with extra propane tanks, like 5 gallon type. And don't forget your manual wheat grinder, because with the manual wheat grinder, if the electricity is off, that is what you will need. You can grind up wheat. You can grind up other grains. You can make variations to your bread. You can add spices. All sorts of things you can do to make that food interesting. You can use beans instead of wheat. You should have beans and legumes. You should have white rice also, and spices, and multivitamins. See, it's just a matter of you get to think about what makes sense to you, and then you get it. Now, everybody has a different idea about what they need or what their family needs, and I have to say, there's really no answer to that. It's something that we all determine, and there is no answer. But I think your 1 year supply of wheat for one person would go really, really fast if you had several people, or if you were going to sprout that wheat, or if you had a dog or other animals to feed. So, by the way, 1 year of wheat, let's see. FEMA says that if wheat was to be your main food, you would eat 275 pounds of wheat in 1 year. Well, I'll tell you, my experience is that one person who was a little bit active or a little bit big would eat 350 pounds of wheat. I think that's a much more realistic number, 350 pounds. That's my experience. So if you want to visualize how much wheat that is, somewhere between those two numbers, between 275 pounds and 350 pounds, it would fill up one 55-gallon drum. So get a 55-gallon drum with an open lid on it and put some wheat in it. It's a good idea. You can always use wheat. Remember your wheat grinder? So, but I said you have to also remember the other things: sugar, salt, and oil, and a cast iron pot, because that supplies your iron, and it's good for cooking in. So that's just the most basic essentials. You can get whatever you want. And there's lots of spices, lots of flavorings. You can get canned or dehydrated peas, dehydrated corn. All these things are really good, but you decide. Many people are concerned with a medical list and what should be on it. That's a good thought. Medical lists are all different for everybody, because we have different experiences and have different knowledge. Pretty much your first aid kit is going to cover the relatively minor wounds, but those are the ones you are going to experience. And you can patch up a lot of injuries on yourself with just the basic materials. I know I've had many wounds which people thought should have gone to the hospital, but I can tell you from my own personal experience that it's surprising how well your body heals itself. And if you clean the wound and add triple antibiotic ointment and then cover it, it takes time, but your body will heal. That's for a flesh wound. And I don't mean to tell you how you should conduct your own first aid needs, because everybody has their own ideas. I'm just telling you my experience, and that is how my body would heal well. For you, you have to check it out for yourself. I know if I cleaned a wound and covered it, it did remarkably well. But for this kind of first aid events, I think there's a couple of basic things you'll want to have on hand. Cloth medical tape is really, really essential. Lots of it. Lots of gauze pads and lots of triple antibiotic ointment. Those are the very basic things. And then you can have something for a little pill to take, common for pain, like your ibuprofen. And of course, I always suggest that anyone take first aid classes. Those classes give you an orientation to examining what the situation is and how to deal with it. Always good to take first aid classes. So beyond this, what else happens beyond cuts and abrasions? Well, there's always things that happen with intestinal areas. There is oral fecal contamination or illnesses, and these are especially serious for the very young and the very old. And a little knowledge goes a long way. You are always going to be concerned about cleanliness and rehydrating that person with electrolyte solutions. Those are the basics, and you can get this basic information when you take classes or when you read. There's a lot of information out there. You just have to take the time and do it. I know all of this can be simple or it can be complicated, and everybody views it differently. because there's a whole lot of medical things that really are complicated, and they do have to be done right. It's just that I'm talking about the simplest kind of wounds that there are, and we can get by with simple first aid for many things. So get some knowledge together and get some supplies together. This is important. I know that everyone gets to decide what they will do and how they will deal with issues. There's no answer for one way or another. It's just that you figure out in your own understanding what it is that you are willing to do and prepare for. There's so much information out there, and you get to decide what it is that that you're willing to deal with and learn about. There is no real answers for what this is or what you do or what you don't do. There's a level of comfort that you have to be willing to deal with. So remember also that as we talk about all these things in the physical sense, I see everything as being a spiritual battle. Everything. So I think about, prayer, of course. I think that's a huge element of how we deal with things. But I think, I look back on, I have a good example of this. This is the 1965 broadcast by Paul Harvey. And he had a message at that time, and it was titled, "If I Were the Devil." Here, I'm going to look at this. That's what his broadcast at that time was that one episode was labeled, "If I Were the Devil." If I were the Prince of Darkness, I would want to engulf the whole world in darkness, and I would have 1/3 of its real estate and 4/5 of its population. But I would not be happy until I had seized the ripest apple of the tree, thee. So I would set about, however necessary, to take over the United States. I would subvert the churches first, and I would ban with a campaign of whisper, with the wisdom of a serpent, I would whisper to you, as I whispered to Eve. Do as you please. To the young I would whisper that the Bible is a myth. I would convince them that man created God instead of the other way around. I would confide that what is bad is good, and that what is good is old-fashioned, and that the old I would teach a new way to pray, and I would get them organized. I would educate the young people and make exciting literature that would distract them from anything that was wholesome. I would peddle narcotics to whom I would, and I would sell alcohol to the ladies and gentlemen of distinction. I would tranquilize the rest with pills. If I were the devil, I would soon have families at war with themselves, churches at war with themselves, and nations at war with themselves, until each in its turn was consumed, and with promises of higher ratings, I would have mesmerizing media fanning the flames. If I were the devil, I would encourage schools to refine young hearts, not young, young intellect, but to neglect to discipline the emotions. I would let those run wild until, before you knew it, you would have drug-sniffing dogs and metal detectors at every schoolhouse door. Within a decade, I would have prisons overflowing. I would have judges promoting pornography. Soon I would evict God from the courthouse door, and then from the schoolhouse, and then from the houses of Congress. And in this his own churches, I would substitute psychology for religion and for science. I would lure parents and priests and pastors into misusing boys and girls. If I were the devil, I would make the symbol of Easter an egg and the symbol for Christmas a bottle. If I were the devil, I would take from those who have and I would give to those who want it until I had killed the incentive of the ambitious. And I will just bet you that you could get whole states to promote gambling as the way to get rich. I would caution against extremes in hard work, in patriotism, in moral conduct. I would convince the young that marriage is an old-fashioned idea, that swinging is more fun, and that what you see on TV is the way to be. And thus, I would undress you in public, and I could lure you into bed with diseases to which there is no cure. In other words, if I were the devil, I would just keep doing right on what you're doing, right on what he is doing. That was a commentary by Paul Harvey, and he ends the commentary by saying, "Good day." That's the way he did it. So I know that there's so many things going on, and what we get to do is figure out what we are going to do about the problems we see, whether it's in society, in our family, in our personal relationships. Somehow, we have to make a decision about how we are going to be moral and godly. Be ye holy, it says. I think that's what we want to be. So keep on looking at these things. Evaluate your life and make the choices. I know we've got things going on today in the world. We have potential conflicts in our schools and among nations. We have troubles with Israel and Syria and Iran and Russia and the United States. And all of these could turn into war. In the whole Middle East, it could affect everything over there. And how would that affect us? Well, we never know. We could have terrorism in this country. We could have an EMP strike against us. We could have shortages of everything. And that's what happened in World War II. There were rationing books for gasoline, for meat, for sugar, and other things. Could it turn into that again? Sure it could. We could have rationing books for everything. So how concerned do we be? I don't know how concerned we should be, but I know a little bit of concern goes a long way. A little bit of actions goes a long way. So get some preparedness in place and examine, what if we did have some pretty serious things? What if there was a famine? What if there was a war? Nobody knows the future. But the Bible does indicate famine, earthquakes, and wars, and pestilence. So I think to prepare for the just-in-case is a good idea. So you remember that you can always listen to this broadcast or another one again just by going to www.christtoday.org. And I will always be glad to send you my free preparedness pamphlet. If you write to me, John Stephenson at P.O. Box 7222, Chico, California, 95927. And in 4 weeks, on October 20th, I am going to be part of a preparedness presentation. That's Saturday, October 20th at 6 p.m. It's a free admission event. And I suppose come a little early so you can get the seat you want. And it will be at the Paradise Performing Arts Center at 777 Newley Road in Paradise. And there will be free giveaways. And again, that's Saturday, October 20th at 6 p.m. Come early and get the seat that you want. Paradise Performing Arts Center, 777 Nunley Road in Paradise. There will be a question and answer period. And, of course, if you want to get some questions that I would answer, I urge you to write me with a question, and I think I will get those ones answered for sure. So write me with a question if you want me to address it at that meeting. We will be talking about all sorts of things, from fire danger to, well, just anything. And I know the fire danger is not the same as it has been in past months because we're getting into the fall, but it's still something to be concerned about. At this event, the admission is free. You're welcome to come. Everyone's welcome. And it is an event that has been sponsored by the Lions, the Business and Professional Lions of Paradise, and Preparedness Thoughts by John Stephenson, which is on KKXX Radio. KKXX, that's 9.30 AM and 104.5 FM. And I hope to see you Saturday, October 20th. And if you can get there a little before 6, that would be great. So, also, if you have some ideas on things you would like addressed, please do write me at the address I just gave you. And I'll have a chance to prepare an answer. So thank you very much for listening today. And remember to get some elements of preparedness for what you have in mind, for whatever it is you see. There's no answers to what could be happening. The only thing is you want to have some elements of preparation for the just in case. So come on by with your questions on October 20th at 6 p.m. And thank you for tuning in today to Christ Today. May you walk with God, and may God walk with you. Shine your light, shine your light.